Welcome back to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of history. My name is Alex Oculi in São Paulo, Brazil, as per usual, and this podcast is also Philip Cunliffe and George Hoare, both in the UK. Hello.
Hi.
So, this is an episode that is in partnership with Damage Magazine. You may have seen that we have announced our partnership with Damage Magazine on an ongoing basis, and so we're going to have plenty of Damage authors on the podcast to discuss the ideas that are presented in that magazine. It's an excellent magazine with plenty about politics in general, but also quite interestingly, lots of psychoanalytic readings of things, of political and social phenomena, which is a very distinctive element to that magazine, which set out at the very beginning to examine the kind of damaged subjectivity. So anyway, very interesting stuff. And this episode in particular is on a topic that is in the second print issue of Damage, which is coming out very soon. I'm very excited to see it come out. There is fantastic stuff in there. And I'm not just saying that because two of the people sat here have articles in that magazine. But it's about deinstitutionalization, which is a big word. Really, the nucleus of it is psychiatric deinstitutionalization, the way that they closed the asylums and threw people out onto the streets under the guise of kind of caring for people in the community, and that didn't really work out. Taking that idea, the magazine then explores various other forms of deinstitutionalization. The magazine's about, or this issue of the magazine is about institutions and our lack of them. So there's loads of ways to explore and unpick that in ways political, social, relating to the built environment, related to kind of cultural practices, etc. So that is all explored in the magazine. I'm very excited to see the second edition come out in print. And of course, if you're a BungaCast subscriber, you have a digital subscription to Damage Magazine. So you should obviously take advantage of that. And you also, if you want to subscribe for the print edition, you can also do that. So anyway, I'm very looking forward to have loads of Damage authors on over the months and years to come. So that's all to look forward to. But for now, I'll pass over to George to introduce who our guest is today.
Yeah, we have a very special guest this evening. Alex Hohuli.
Special as in special needs, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how I'm pronouncing your name correctly, right? Hohuli?
Mm. Oh, cool. I don't mind, yeah.
Yeah, how do you pronounce your name? I mean, you know, Hohuli. Like I've never actually worked this out over 7 years of being on the pod. What?
We knew each other for many years before the podcast as well.
I don't really remember that. Like, it's all a bit vague.
It's a long time ago. Anyway, we have Alex H, who is joining us to talk about, as Alex was saying, one of the articles in the forthcoming second issue of Damage, From ADHD to Let Me Be, Taking Control of Time. But this is also part of our Emotion Sickness, The Politics of Feeling series. So we're going to be exploring some of these questions around, I guess, essentially what comes next in emotional terms after the angry decade of populism of the 2010s, and what should we do about it? So this episode, also listeners should check out episode 365, It's So Over Again with Ryan Zitgraff, because with a lot of the same themes were discussed then. But I guess I'm in the position of being able to say how what my reading of Alex's article is. And I think one of the central ideas here, and Alex, you obviously can disagree if I'm butchering this this article, is that essentially you're kind of exploring what is this affect that is going to be associated with disengagement or withdrawal, political disengagement, political withdrawal, this affect of kind of checking out, switching off, focusing on other things. And maybe we can dig into whether this is a resentful withdrawal or a resigned one. And just, I guess, a bit more detail for listeners. What does the piece cover? So there are three, I think Alex lays out these three ideas or three modes of disengagement. One is around work, and this is the idea of quiet quitting. One is in the kind of urban environment, and this is around proximity urbanism and those kind of 15-minute cities. We'll obviously dig into all of these in a lot more detail. And then the third one is post-liberalism as this kind of disengagement from liberal theory and liberal politics.
Yeah, I would say that those are not necessarily modes. They're not, it's not meant to be kind of exhaustive or anything. Those are just case studies. You know, they're kind of like ways to look at how people are disengaging, not on an individualistic basis, but on a more politically conscious basis in some way.
Cool. So yeah, three case studies then, which I guess, or in my reading, set up this argument that you bring in, which is that politics that looks to control time is a potential route out of this kind of situation of resigned or resentful disengagement. So yeah, I guess just to frame things then, the first question, because it makes sense for you to talk about your own article rather than me ventriloquize you. But yeah, the first question is that this central claim of the piece, or at least as I read it, is that following this populist moment of the 2010s, quote, "we are now faced with a period of withdrawal and disengagement, with a turn to the private and the individual after a decade that strove for something more public and collective." Can you expand on this a little bit? What's the kind of setup?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, regular listeners to this podcast will be familiar with the idea that we have described the 2010s as, you know, the populist decade, the decade of anti-politics, right? Of a kind of, which, you know, we characterize as an angry rejection of the political establishment. And indeed, not just the political establishment, it should be clear. It's not just kind of parliamentarians or congressmen and presidents and prime ministers who get it in the neck. But it is a rejection also of lots of kind of para institutions, you know, para political institutions like the media, the law, advocacy groups, NGOs, whatever, just a kind of like anybody who's part of that class of people who are kind of knowledge makers involved in politics, whatever, kind of get rejected as no longer holding the knowledge that they supposed was, or they presented as being kind of critical, a critical legitimation to their rule. Put it that way. And that has, to a certain extent, it hasn't gone away. Though I remember we debated this on this podcast, and George was actually presenting the case at the time that, that, you know, we're, that it's over, right? Like in the meme, it's so over. George was very much, it's so over. And I was like a kind of, it's so back guy. George making the point that, you know, after, particularly in Britain, but, you know, I guess with wider application, that after Brexit and all the tumult around that, all kind of poured cold water on by the pandemic, that now people are kind of just, whatever, going back to their own affairs, not particularly happy about it, but without that kind of combustible, potentially political energy about in the air. And I actually disagreed with that, but, you know, kind of have come to, as time has progressed, kind of, there's an element to it. But I think the one point, and I think we're going to come on to this, is that we are in an age, and again, this is the theme of deinstitutionalization, which is because we are not bound kind of by these collective civic associations, we're not in institutions very often, other than kind of maybe our workplace, that things are very ephemeral and change very quickly and very dependent on mood. It's a bit like the stock market, which has always been dependent on mood, except we all live in a stock market, effectively, a social stock market. And when things are dependent on mood, they shift very quickly. It's a very volatile situation. Suddenly everyone's really angry and in the streets, and then it disappears. The protest is gone. Everybody goes back home. And then suddenly something else sparks something off in a completely different way. And things are very fast moving, recombining in different ways, ideologically amorphous often, and changing shape and whatever. So this is stuff that we've discussed before. We've discussed it in terms of hyperpolitics, etc. My what I want to do in the article, in the essay, is make kind of an argument along two tracks. One is this political one, which I've just been describing, that you have this sort of anti-politics and really hyper-politics, where politics filters down into all areas of life, breaks down the boundaries of public and private. Arguments over the dinner table are kind of life and death things about whether you are, you know, a Trumpist or an anti-Trumpist or whatever it might be, depending where you are. And that people are kind of getting tired of that. That people are sharing articles less, people are reading less newspapers, people are making fewer donations to political parties, etc. Of course, these things are all kind of nationally specific. So, you know, different nations politics run by different rhythms. In the US, it's going to be the four-year election cycle, which determines everything. And so if you're reading this or seeing this or kind of perceiving this in the US, it's going to be rather determined by that. And in, you know, in the Netherlands, it might be completely different because now they've just kind of, the biggest party is this kind of far right anti-Islamic party, which has come to the fore. And so maybe things are very tumultuous there in a way that they weren't before. In Germany, things are very tumultuous in the way that they weren't for the previous decade when everything was calm and Mutti Merkel was having things under control, et cetera, et cetera. It varies. So again, I think this just underscores the point about volatility, ephemerality, yeah, mood. But what the other track of what I want to examine is the social one, which is a much longer term transformation where where the accelerated pace of life, rhythm of life has gotten in many cases kind of too much for lots of people. And people have different ways of negotiating that, but there might be a sense of strain, anxiety, even exhaustion socially, which kind of goes in much longer terms. And we can get into the kind of bigger sociology about this, about the end of modernity even, about the right, coming of a kind of total capitalism versus a world in which there's no outside to capitalism, what Branko Milanovic characterized in his book, you know, Capitalism Alone. Many different ways to conceive of this, and we can get into that. But I guess my point is that there's like the immediate political kind of phenomenon going on of disengagement from politics. And there's a deeper, longer term social transformation, which has increased strains and indeed even constraints on people's lives, despite the appearance of a proliferation of choice in people's right, lives.
So socially, acceleration has become too much. People withdraw politically. You have this kind of exhaustion of hyper politics. Some volatility remains, but essentially people disengage. This is the you know, I think it's important to be crude and summarize things in this way.
Oh, we know you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is George's gist. This is what people like. They don't have enough time for the whole complexities. You want the TLDR or TLDL. Too long, didn't listen. But yeah, I guess the question then, or I guess not really a question, I guess I'm going to stay true to the point that I made previously, which is that I'm not sure that I agree with this kind of overall account. I think to the extent that this kind of withdrawal or disengagement politically is presented as a kind of exhaustion, it doesn't sit completely right with me. I think instead, as you kind of mentioned, this, it seems to me that the pandemic was an important demobilization like moment. So it's not a kind of individual level withdrawal or disengagement. You know, it's not about agency on the part of the citizenry as much as, you know, a process of lockdowns, which were a deliberate attempt to manage kind of political dissent and to kind of dissipate and successfully so discharge that kind of populist energy and anger. Am I being too crude or what?
I don't in any way deny that is a massive thing. As we
just missed the opportunity to say he's being too crude, Alex.
Yeah, I just did before that. So, you know, you don't want to nail him too hard. You know, you gotta let that crude, can't purify all the crude, I guess, as Venezuela has discovered. Anyway, so hi there, friends. This is the end of a sample from an episode available only to subscribers at patreon.com/bungacast. For $7 a month, subscribers get at least 4 original exclusive episodes a month, featuring Alex, George, and Phil, as well as our regular contributors, Alex Gurevich, Amberly Frost, Catherine New, and Lee Phillips. We've got episodes on current affairs, extended interviews, exclusive episodes on theory, history, culture, docuseries, analyses of film, and our responses to listeners' questions and criticisms. And for $12 a month, you also get access to the very special BungaCast Reading Club, where we present the key books and essays necessary for understanding the world today, how we got here, and where we might be going. Of course, if you just want to try us out, there's also a $3 entry tier giving you one exclusive episode a month. We do hope you'll join us. These are turbulent times, and ideologically confused ones as well. we tried to find some political clarity so that we might move beyond the age of Bunga Bunga.